There's a Gemara, Yuma, Chav Beis Mabez. And this Gemara is something that everybody knows. If you ever learned Navi, then you definitely know this Gemara. Rav Huna says, Sho'ol ba'achas va'osalo. Sho'ol did one thing wrong, and it ruined his life. It destroyed everything for him. Just one thing. David b'shtayim v'lo osalo. David did two things, and it didn't bother him whatsoever. Two things. The Gemara says, what was the difference between the two? What really did Sho'ol HaMelech do? What did David HaMelech do? Sho'ol HaMelech, you know what he did? He didn't kill Agag. He didn't kill Agag, the king of Amalek. Killed every single other person of Amalek, left Agag alive, because that one sin, he lost his kingdom, he died early, and it was even kasha whether he got Olam Haba. In the end, for sure he got Olam Haba. The pasuk itself says he was the Bechir Hashem, the chosen one of Hashem, but he lost everything. David HaMelech, what did David HaMelech do? Well, he committed murder with Uriah Chiti and Gilia Arias with Bathsheba. The Oslo, and he was fine. Can you compare those sins for a second? Gilia Arias and Shvichas Damim versus killing every person in Amalek except for one. And for some reason, Sho'ol is never forgiven. But David HaMelech, forgiven, no problem whatsoever. And if you think about it, Sho'ol HaMelech had a good reason not to kill Agag. He said, I have rachamim. I want to have mercy. Sho'ol HaMelech looked at Agag and said, why shouldn't I have rachamim on Agag, the king of Amalek? He doesn't deserve to die, along with the rest of the nation. There's so many great things here. Why should I do it? And he had an actual Siba, a real Siba behind it. David HaMelech, why did he kill Uriah Chiti and why was he together with Bathsheba? Out of Taiva? Was there any like Svara behind it where he said, oh no, this is what I need to do at this moment? Is there anything like that? Have you seen any Medrash on that? You've been looking up Midrash. What?
Sparks of Mashiach.
That? Ruach HaKodesh is supposed to be that person. He was destined to be with her. Okay, but to kill the husband for that? That's a pella. It's a pella. It's really a pella. It just doesn't make any sense. You know you're going to marry. Wait. Especially if she was so young. Chazal says she might have been 7 or 8 years old. Just wait. We all know the sins of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. Egel Azov is horrible. Korach, horrible. The complaints, the taivas. But they were forgiven for every single one of them, except for the Meraglim, which we'll talk about soon. They're forgiven for the Egel. Everything was forgiven to them. Moshe Rabbeinu hits a rock instead of speaking to it and somehow is never able to do tshuva for the remainder of his life. Hashem looks at him immediately. You hit the rock, you're not going to Eretz Yisrael, right? You have to stay out or you can't even be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Lose that. What was so bad about what he did that made him lose it? You mean to tell me that that's worse than the Egel Azov? They killed Hur. They worshipped Avodah Zarah. And Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to be forgiven. Now, if you tell me Moshe Rabbeinu was on too high of a level, Bnei Yisrael on a lower level, David HaMelech was on a higher level than Sho'ol, wasn't he? Wouldn't you assume that? And yet David was forgiven. So what's the difference? Something is clearly going on. And the last question that I want to ask before we get into explanations is really an obvious one that has been answered in so many different ways. We all know, the Shlach HaKadosh says in Parshas Tetzaveh, it's in Drush Sheni for Parshas Zachar, says, he brings an Arizal. It says, Yom HaKippurim is called Yom Kippur. Why is it called Yom HaKippurim? And we all know why, right? Because it's a day that's Kippurim. Purim is the ultimate day, the special day that can bring a person to a higher madriga than you were on before. And it's even greater than Yom Kippur. How in the world does that work? How in the world does that work? Now, this is answered. And I'm sure people have answers for this. That's not that big of a kasha. But it boggles the mind just to think about that somebody could even claim that Purim is greater than Yom Kippur. It boggles the mind to even consider it. How is that possible at all? Okay, the Meraglim, the spies, as we mentioned before, they had one job. Their job was go into the land of Eretz Yisrael, just confirm what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already told Bnei Yisrael, confirm what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said to Moshe, come back and tell the people what they saw. That's all they had to do. All they had to do was confirm what God said. And if they would have done that, they would have gained eternal bliss in this world and the next. Nothing would have gone wrong. They would have entered Eretz Yisrael with Moshe Rabbeinu, built up the third Beis HaMikdash instead of the first two, built up the third Beis HaMikdash, and everything would have been fine. But what was the issue? Why didn't the Meraglim do that? Because they started to make cheshbonos. They thought about it for a bit, and they thought of problems. Let's think of the problems over here. There were people dying in the land. The people seemed too strong for them to be able to defeat. There were too many of the people out there. Did they really want to go on without Moshe Rabbeinu, thinking maybe Moshe Rabbeinu would die beforehand? Did they really want to be without the Mun and the Be'er Shel Miriam and the Nenei HaKavod? Did they really want the land in the first place? And so much more. All of those thoughts were going into their heads until in the end, they turned to Kofrim Be'ikr. Kofrim Be'ikr, where they said, Chazaku Mimenu, they're stronger than God. They didn't start off that way. They did not start off that way. Although Rashi says, Vayelchu Vayavo, that they went with the same evil intentions as when they came back. Chazal say they were Anashim, they were Tzadikim. These were great Tzadikim in the name of Klal Yisrael. Two of them were Kalev and Yoshua. You'd assume the equivalent of Kalev and Yoshua in every Shevet was brought from every single Shevet. These are great, great, great men. So what happened to them? The issue was that even if they were L'shem Shemayim in what they did, there was a pagam in their avdus. Their avoda had something that was wrong in how they were serving Hashem. What was wrong with how they were serving Hashem? There was a tiny, tiny bit wrong in how they were an eved to Hashem. What is an eved? What does a slave do? And I know we can't even imagine what it's like nowadays. I could tell my cleaning lady 1,000 times to do something. If she doesn't do it, what am I going to do? Kill her? What's the worst thing I'm going to do? Fire her? That's the worst thing I'm going to do, right? I can't do anything else. An eved back then had to listen to his master without question. You could not do anything on your own. Doesn't matter if you're going to get hurt from it. If the Eved himself is going to get damaged from it, an Eved does what his master says for him to do. And if that means throw himself into a fire, up until the point of death, he listens to his master. That was Eliezer ben Avram. Eliezer ben Avram comes right up to Avram Levine. It comes right up to the Bisuel and Lavan. Said, Eved Avram Anochi, I have to do exactly as my master tells me. I can't do anything different, because that's what an Eved is. All that matters is what the master tells him. And that's what an Eved is. The Meraglim had one job, and they had a master telling them what to do, and they were the Avadim. And they didn't do it. They didn't do it. They could have, they might have had the greatest cheshbonos in the world. We don't deserve this, Moshe Rabbeinu, this and that and the other. But they didn't do what they were supposed to do. They had a job and they didn't do it. That's not an Eved. The Avdus was pogim. There was something wrong with their service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what sent them down a slippery slope that eventually led to them being kofrim in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Churban Gemaras, one of my greatest examples, it's in Nun Vav Amud Aleph in Gittin. Marta Bas Baisus, right, goes to her servants, to her Eved, and says, go get me fine flour from the marketplace. And the servant comes back and says, there's no fine flour left, there's white flour left. She says, go get white flour from the marketplace. Comes back, there's no white flour in the marketplace, there's black flour in the marketplace, you know, coarse flour. She said, okay, go get me that coarse flour. Comes back, there's no coarse flour, there's barley flour. She says, go get me barley flour. It comes back, there is no barley flour left. Okay, what kind of an idiot doesn't just buy the next level? How in the world, you know what she wants, you know what she's asking, just get her what she needs. Don't keep coming back and going. It's just ridiculous. Why did he keep doing it? And the answer is, you don't know what an Eved is. An Eved doesn't do anything unless he's instructed to do it. The kasha is not on the Eved. The kasha is on Marta Bas Baisus. Why didn't Marta Bas Baisus just say, go get me whatever you can get? She didn't say that. She said, go get me X, go get me Y, go get me Z, and that's it. And when X, Y, and Z were sold, the Eved said, I can't do it. I have no ability to do anything else. That's what an Eved does. An Eved listens to his master, even if it's to his own detriment. I would assume that Eved died. There was no food left in the house. Marta Bas Baisus died. I would assume the Eved died. Why? Because he couldn't go against what his master said. And that's what it means. A true Eved is mevatel his own mindset to someone else's, even to his own detriment, even when he loses out from it. Chizkiyahu HaMelech is really, really sick. He's dying. And Yeshaya tells him, goes to visit him. Yeshaya was told by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you have to go visit him. He told him, you're going to die and you have no chelek in olam. Mos velo sichya. You're going to die and you won't live. It's very easy to die if you're just going to live afterward. You should be fine, right? But mos velo sichya, you're going to die in this world. You won't live in the next world. How in the, it can't, doesn't make any sense. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was one of the greatest kings in our history, if not the greatest king. As great as David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech were, no one was able to bring his entire generation to the level that Chizkiyahu HaMelech brought them to. There were such unbelievable Talmidei Chachamim, where even the women and children who were Ami Aratzim Gemurim knew everything to know about Taurus, Tumah and Taurus. There's nobody like them when it comes to stuff like that. He was one of the people, it could have been that he was Mashiach, if not for the fact that he didn't sing, which is already an unbelievable thing, but he didn't sing when he got saved from Sancheiriv, from the armies of Sennacherib, he would have been Mashiach, says the Gemara. That's how great Chizkiyahu HaMelech was. And for what? Why was he going to die? Anybody remember? It's the reason why he was going to die. What did he do wrong? Murder? Avodah Zarah? Gilui Arayos? No. He never had a child. He didn't get married. Can you imagine a king not getting married? He refused to give in to the taiva to get married because he saw through his Ruach HaKodesh that his child was going to be evil. Menashe was going to be an evil child, not just evil. Menashe was going to be a murderer, an Ovid of Rezar Gomer, a person who's going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash and burn Sifrei Torah. He said, I'd rather not have a child. He said, forget it, I don't want to have a child. So he didn't get married and didn't want to have a child at all. So Yeshaya, when he heard that, and Chizkiyahu even turned to Yeshaya, he said, what do you mean? I'm going to die. I'm going to lose my chelek in Olam Haba. I'm not having a child because of what I saw in Ruach HaKodesh. I want you to realize this, Yeshaya. You might be a Navi. I have Ruach HaKodesh, and I see in my vision what my child's going to be like, and I don't want it. I don't want it. I say no. I don't want to have that child. He even turned to Yeshaya and said, you know he's going to kill you. If I give birth to this child, Menashe's going to kill you. And he did. Menashe killed Yeshaya. He said, you want this to happen? I don't want it to happen. And Yeshaya tells him the most mind-boggling line of all time. Bahadi kavshi d'rachman alamalach. With all these dealings that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is dealing with, what do you have to do with it? It's not you. It's not on you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a mitzvah. The mitzvah is pur revu. You don't ask any questions. You do that mitzvah. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants your child to be evil, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants your child to be evil. That's his deal. That has nothing to do with you. Yet the greatest excuse in the world, I don't think there's ever been a better excuse not to get married than this. How could there be a better excuse? You know what your children are going to be. They're going to be, you're only going to have one child. He's going to be unbelievably evil. I don't want to get married and I don't want to do it. And he was a king. He could have been together with any woman in the kingdom. And he said no, he remained single in order not to have a child. And Yeshaya tells him, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. You can't do that. You do it even if it makes no sense. Because if your master tells you to do something, you do it no matter what, and that's the idea behind it. You have no choice to be able to do it. Whatever he has to do, let him take care of it. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take care of it. You can never potter yourself from any mitzvah whatsoever. That's our issue with Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech did one thing wrong. His sin came with cheshbonos. He sat there and he said, I don't think I should kill Agag. I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to kill Agag and all of Amalek. I don't think I should. I think it would be better if I left him alive. Why? Because I think that's the more merciful thing to do. You don't get to make cheshbonos when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do something. If Hashem gave you a tzivui, you do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, even if it makes no sense, and even if you have a better thought process, chas v'shalom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to do it, you do it. The line that said in Kohelet about this, Al ti tzadik harbe, don't be too big of a tzadik. Don't think you're a greater tzadik than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're more merciful than God? You're more merciful than what Hashem says? No, absolutely not. And it's hard. Be an Eved. Even, I don't want you to be this free-thinking Western civilization individual that you should be here, right? In which you get everything down over here that they want you to be, that America wants you to be. I don't want you to be a free thinker. I want you to do what I told you to do. David HaMelech sinned horribly. And they were terrible sins. Gilui Arayos and Shefichas Damim are horrible, but there were sins born out of passion and attitude, so to speak. Sins that were born from an idea. They weren't sins on the basic relationship that you have with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That wasn't the sin. It was a mikshel. It was a sin, and it had to be corrected. And David HaMelech did correct it. He did tshuva for years. He fasted for years. There were crazy amounts of things that David HaMelech did. But they could be corrected because David HaMelech understood what he had done wrong in the first place, understood that it was about Taiva, and therefore worked on it and get there, but not Shaul. He was missing a basic fact that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do something, you do it. And the truth is, he got led up to this. Do you remember the thing that he did beforehand, which was almost a sin, but not exactly a sin? What was it? Before not killing Agag, he did something else that was wrong, and Shmuel Navi called him out it, and Shmuel Navi said, there's no way you're going to last as king. He didn't wait to bring the korban for Shmuel and Abi to come. Shmuel and Abi comes, when he gets to this certain place, wait for me on the seventh day. And Shaul HaMelech saw his army was leaving him. He knew that he had to fight a war that day. And he said, I can't wait for Shmuel. I have to go ahead and bring the korban right now. Comes Shmuel and Abi turns to Shaul and says, I told you to wait. Now granted, that's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu commanding you. Therefore, he didn't lose out on anything, on everything. He could have done tshuva. But Shmuel and Avi looked at Shaul and said, because of this attitude that you have, that your thought process can supersede someone else's, this attitude that you have, you will not remain king. You're going to lose your kingdom. Because at one point, you're going to do it when it comes to Hashem, and you're going to lose everything. And he did. That's exactly what happened. Shaul Melech could not do tshuva for this. It was the exact same issue with Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't want to say he thought about it too much. This is Moshe Rabbeinu we're talking about. But hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock was with cheshbonos. There was a cheshbon involved. Bnei Yisrael doesn't deserve for me to speak to the rock. I don't know if speaking to the rock is going to work. He got angry, and therefore something else happened. Something happened with cheshbonos. And again, that was his downfall. Was it a big sin? No. No. He still caused the water to come out. And the last time in Parshas Bishalach, he was told to hit the rock. It's not like he was totally off and hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. But he did something that was L'shem Shamayim with a cheshbon. And he added on a cheshbon to it, his own cheshbon. There's no tshuva for such a thing. You can't do tshuva for that. That means you're not an Eved. And if you're not an Eved, you can't do that. That was the real challenge of the Akedah. Way to think about that for a second. What was the real challenge of the Akedah? The real challenge. I don't mean to say this, to kill your kid? If a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you direct tzivui, you wouldn't kill your kid? If you got a direct tzivui, you wouldn't do it? I have kids, and I understand how hard that would be most of the time. I can understand that. But at the end of the day, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks to you directly, what's the challenge? So this question is, again, answered by so many different Rishonim. So many Rishonim, not just Acharonim. Rishonim that ask this question. But the real challenge would be this. Don't think about it. Avram Avinu is the guy telling everybody, don't do child sacrifice, and now he's being told by God to do child sacrifice? Avram Avinu, right, heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, Va'aleu sham la'ola. Bring him up there as an ola. He didn't say kill him. He didn't say kill him. Maybe it only means I should bring him up there and take him right back down. No cheshbonos. No cheshbonos. He didn't think about it. He didn't consider it to himself. He didn't wake up in the morning and say, that was a crazy dream. I don't think that really happened. He woke up in the morning, said, this is what I saw, takes Yitzchak with him, and immediately is willing to kill him. Willing to kill him. And even though, how long of a trip is it from Yerushalayim to Hebron? I mean, you've all been there, right? Yerushalayim to Hebron. How long does it take to get from Yerushalayim to Hebron?
Walk 3 hours.
Three hours. Well, by driving.
Driving,
it takes like 45 minutes. Take Derech Hebron. Just take Derech Hebron right there. The only reason why it takes a little bit longer is because you have like the stopping points. Oh, by bus maybe. It's 45 minutes to an hour at the most to get to Hebron. Hebron is not that far. So if you're going from Hebron, where Avram Avinu was, to Yerushalayim, the opposite way, by walking, what, 7 hours, 8 hours? And it took him 3 days. You know why? Because he got lost and he had no idea where to go. And he's walking around Har Moriah over and over and over again. He was told to go. One of the mountains over there. And to keep walking around. Can you imagine what it was like for 2.5 days? He's just walking around. And during those 2.5 days, any sane, normal human being would be like, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I messed up. Maybe I didn't get the right translation of that dream that I had last night or 2 nights ago or 3 nights ago. Any normal person would do that. Avram Avinu did not think at all. He plowed forward as if the only thing on his mind is kill my kid. That was the greatness of Avram Avinu. That even though it went against everything he stood for, even though it made absolutely no sense, and even though he was taking hours and days to do this and it didn't make any sense, nonetheless, I'm willing to do it. Amalek is the exact opposite. The eradication of Amalek is because Amalek is filled with free-thinking individuals. Western civilization, their pride and joy. College students from all over the globe who think they understand how life works and they get to make decisions what they should do in any given moment. No one can tell me what to do. No one. I get to make these decisions on my own. They're not slaves to anything in their own minds. There is no one in charge of them, even though in truth they are the greatest slaves to modern day society that could possibly exist. They're slaves to whatever TV or movies tell them. They're slaves to what the trends are. They're slaves to whatever civilization, society tells them is the most important thing at that moment. There's no question about that. But they believe that they're in charge. There is no God. They do whatever they want. But we're not. We're slaves, whether we like it or not. We became slaves when we accepted the Torah in Har Sinai. The nations of the world became slaves when they were born into this world through Adam Arishon. And we have a master who we hope knows what's best for us. And even if we don't see it, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference. Even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away all my money and takes away all of my everything I have, it doesn't make a difference. He's still our master. That's a big difference. That's how people survived with their thought process intact when they were in the Holocaust. Because they have a master who's doing everything to them. And we don't get it, and we have no idea why. And we should never, ever have to go through anything remotely like it, ever. But nonetheless, that's the difference between us and Amalek. We believe we have a master. We do what our master says, no matter what. Amalek believes they do on their own. Our eradication of Amalek is getting rid of those thought processes within our mind. If you ever see a guy at the end of, when you read Parshas Amalek, Parshas Zohar, I don't know if you saw this past Shabbos. You see a guy stamp their foot like as a, it's a Hasidish minhag. Stamp your foot after that happens. You know why? It's to destroy any vestige of Amalek that you have within you. It's supposed to be as if I have it right there. And that's why, we'll end with this, why we get drunk on Purim. That's the point of getting drunk on Purim. You rid yourself of your own thoughts, your own ideas. Anything that you want, your own desire, is gone. When you drink on Purim to the point where you don't know what's going on, you can't think straight anymore. All you do is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. And that's it. There's nothing else. The greatest fight that we can put up against Amalek is just that. But that's what Purim is all about. Purim is really about trying to understand what it means to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a pure Eved and not as somebody who's a master in and of itself. And if that's true, then it makes total sense that Purim is a greater day than Yom Kippur. As great as Yom Kippur is, you're going into it with your own thoughts. You're going into it with your own ideas. What you want. God, I want this and I want that and I want this and I want that. There's so many things that I want. It's all about you, even though it's not necessarily supposed to be. It's about you. It's about you. What you want to get out of this world. Purim, you can't think that way. You're a mevatzer of your thought process. Instead, you're just one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're an Eved to Hashem, and an Eved to Hashem does whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. That's an amazing line. And if we do that correctly, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu automatically gives us what we know we should be davening for. Because it's not you speaking anymore. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your master, speaking through you. That's the crazy part. It's really an awesome idea. But the idea is to be a true Eved Hashem. Shkar, guys. How do you do this? Oh. Sorry, this thing before. I thought he was going to bring it.